Welcome back, folks. This is Pádraic from the Humble Coach Podcast. I am joined today by an excellent coach. His name is Paul Clark. Paul is the owner of MatchFit Ireland, based in Meath in Ireland. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Pádraic, hi. How are you doing?
Good, now, good. Paul, before we dig into any of the kind of details of I suppose of your opinions on different areas of coaching as it is, could you give us a little bit of a background on yourself? I know you've got a vast experience, but can we try and get a little bit of a feel for who you are and where you've come from, if we could?
Sure, yeah. I guess probably at the core of everything that I do, I'm a coach. Probably what I spotted many, many years ago about Pádraic was the fact that within teams, be they amateur teams or professional teams, that the staff tend to somewhat exist in silos, if you like. So the physical people do their thing, the technical people do their thing, the tactical people do their thing, and the physios kind of sit somewhere there as well on their own. Mm-hmm. And the communication levels mightn't be huge and still aren't in many cases. So effectively, probably a while back, probably go about 15, 16 years ago now at this stage, when football was finished with me, I really kind of embraced the whole coaching piece, but really had a look at the performance piece as much as the coaching piece, saying, okay, what are the constituent parts of performance and then how do we tie them all up together? Mm-hmm. So effectively, that's what I do now. If I'm working with a team or a player myself, it's obviously slightly easier insofar as that I'm affecting performance readiness change myself and what I do from the point of view of direct coaching, looking at technical, tactical, you know, decision-making, the physical piece through strength and conditioning, sports science. If I'm working, say, with a team that's not, you know, directly under my own supervision, it can be quite nichey insofar as it might be just a sports science piece to do with monitoring, or could we just do with coaching. But at the same time, what I'll always try and do is involve everybody. So use kind of an integrated model rather than an isolated model to bring everybody together for the benefit of the player. Because when you keep the player or athlete at the center of everything that you do, then success tends to flow a little bit easier. Whereas if it's just about the particular discipline, be it strength and conditioning, be it sports science, be it the actual coaching piece, it does just that part. It exists in isolation, and the solution is not always, you know, relevant to the overall issue that's at hand. And it's really kind of getting to grips with the issue at hand, asking the big questions and asking the right questions so that we can come up with the right answers. So I guess in short, really what I trade in is performance readiness. And that can be a little bit different for different people that I work with. But invariably, you've got to look at all the different factors. As I said, be they sports science, strength conditioning, be it the coaching piece, how we not so much what we coach, but how we coach for the benefit of the player, whether they're youth or adult. It's on whatever grade they're at. Basically, the grade is somewhat irrelevant for, you know, a lot of the time, because the you're still dealing with people. And I think that's something that I try and bring to the party quite a bit, is that, you know, people see them as players or athletes, but I kind of see them as people.
Very much. I think that's for me, that's a very interesting approach on it. I think it's the best approach, absolutely, because it a very integrated model is super important. I suppose when you look at, you deal with primarily, I suppose, GAA teams, more so than not, potentially. But I know you've worked with a lot of different hockey teams and rugby teams and things like that. So it would definitely make a bit of a difference depending on the nuance of the sport. But a huge amount of the time, I think people underestimate the importance of just that integrated type of a situation for any particular team, even if it is a lower league team or whatever it is. The fact that you can get everybody involved and get everyone on the same page really does make a huge difference to the quality of work being done.
Yeah, I think so. I think to borrow an American phrase, there's a lot of, how would you put it, cookie cutter approaches used whereby the program has to fit the player or athlete, rather than actually saying, okay, well, I know it's in my toolbox, but you know, what do we need to take out of the toolbox to suit this player or athlete or team, as the case may be. Because in my experience, whether you're dealing, say, as you mentioned there, an amateur grade, professional grade, semi-professional, you know, the key to the whole thing is the player or the group of players or athletes feeling comfortable that, yeah, I'm on the road here to performance readiness, to being really, really, you know, robust when the day comes that I have to walk across that white line.
Mm-hmm.
When they feel that they're in a good place, my experience would say that just kind of issuing cookie cutter programs doesn't work in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
That we kind of really have to reverse engineer. It's in unison with the players saying, okay, you know, as a group, what do we want to achieve? And as individuals, what do you need to achieve for the group to achieve that? And then reverse engineer that backwards, which is a bit of work.
Yeah.
But I think when you involve everybody in the process, you land back at, you know, you start at your end point and work back to right today and say, okay, well, this is what we need to do from today onwards. Mm-hmm. And invariably, everybody tends to be bought into that. So, you know, again, to kind of use a strength and conditioning analogy, rather than kind of going in and saying, okay, we're going to do 3 sets of 10 with you,
yeah,
you know, what's that about, you know? Mm-hmm. Has there been any kind of needs analysis, communications, etc. done with the mm-hmm. player or players or the athletes? And again, regardless of what level it's at, because very quickly, you know, these players, athletes, as I mentioned, they're still people, they'll mm-hmm. kind of sour to this kind of approach pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you're in a world of pain. I think you in a commercial setting there will realize that probably maybe better than people in a performance setting, that you really, really yeah. do need to cater to the specific needs of the person, that
absolutely.
They need to feel that they've been listened to.
Mm-hmm. Very much. I think that's a really interesting one, because especially I suppose when we go back a little bit more to the general kind of population element at the moment, that's an interesting point you brought up, and I'll give you a little bit on that. But for me, the interesting thing, whenever I'm watching any, we'll say just for example, the kind of GA in general, or your, I think Irish sport is interesting like that, because it still has a challenging mentality when it comes to that integrated or that collective model of thinking. It tries fine, but it still is quite segmented into the S&C kind of crew, and then the physio crew, and there's a little bit of in and out kind of stuff with them. I know a lot of kind of, I suppose, quite high level physios, and they would definitely agree with a lot of what the S&C guys are doing, but the S&C guys are going to have their own kind of nuances to that, and they have their own interests on it, and I suppose there's definitely a bit of back and forth on it. But the interesting thing for me there was when you get a team from the kind of the beginning, making sure that they can actually stay interested and stay very progressive is quite challenging. But like you said, if the gym program is the same all the time and it's just very generic and it's just quite cookie cutter, it's very difficult to allow people to maintain really interesting a real interest in it, as well as the actual sport itself. Never mind, I suppose I know a lot of people who will go off season and they'll get this nice gym program and it's such and such and such and such, and they just rock through it for 2 months, and then they're like, great, I'm going to go back into my normal training again. So they'll shut off the actual the gym work. Or I know in the last maybe year or two it's improved a lot, but even still there's a huge amount of teams that will just drop all gym work and all maintenance work, and then go back to purely pitch-based stuff, which is very, very challenging for the physios and the S&C guys, because they're having to do a huge amount more work on top of that then to try and recalibrate. When you go into work with a particular team, you mentioned needs analysis there, and I think that'd be a vital, vital part of it. Have you found much progress in that kind of a realm in the recent past, or is it still quite a challenging one to get massive buy-in from the groups that you're working with when it comes to the likes of needs analysis?
Yeah, I think it's getting better. I think probably where it holds a small advantage, Patrick, is that in a past life I was involved in sales and business development.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I say to sometimes this time of year, you know, I kind of go in and do some talks with fourth year graduates at the end of the college days. And, you know, the invariably the question come up, well, what do you think we should go on and do in CPD and stuff like that? What should we study on an ongoing basis? And I'll always say, probably do a course in sales. And I get these funny looks.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I'm making is that if you read online content quite a bit, be it on LinkedIn or be it on Instagram, there's quite a frustration out there amongst performance professionals, be it in sports science, strength and conditioning, and in coaching, that, you know, Jesus, the head coach just doesn't get me. You know, he doesn't know what I'm bringing to the party, and that can be valid. But the onus is really on the performance professional, the members performance team, to try and encourage that working culture where you say, look, I have an approach here I think might work, and here's what it looks like at the end if it does work. Mm-hmm. And again, work backwards from that. Because otherwise, the whole thing is just going to exist in silos. And
yeah.
The important thing, what you said there about needs analysis, is that there's a free sharing of what you find from your needs analysis.
Mm-hmm.
That look, from the science is telling me this, the strength tests are telling me this, but the player and athlete is telling me this.
Yeah.
So it's the perfect blend of subjective and objective information that, once presented properly, is very, very hard to argue with, and can start a real, real conversation amongst the performance team. And I find it kind of ironic sometimes that even in professional settings where there's a lot of team building activity goes on, there's not much team building amongst the performance staff, which is quite ironic actually, because they're the ones that really need to be a unified team, because what they can bring to the table is their, obviously, their professional wisdom and knowledge and experience, but also the benefit of understanding the overall player as a person, understanding where what they need is from a coaching point of view, from a decision-making point of view, from everything. And equally, you mentioned there, the physio strength and condition relationship is absolutely vital. It's massive. And the best teams out there, the teams that achieve the most, quite simply, they've got their players available more often, all of their
exactly.
players available more often. And it does come down to these performance staff working together, especially the physio and the sports science guy or girl and the strength conditioning guy or girl.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's leading on to the next point, like that, the minimizing of both injury to your team or to yourself if you're an individual athlete or whatever it is. And then also, even as the season goes on or throughout the years, just the lowering of that injury potential. Is a huge, huge part, and I think I absolutely agree. The teams that normally have a lot more players available than they usually do a lot more damage. it very much is a straightforward numbers game sometimes. I like it. I love looking at the likes of Dublin, and Dublin are an interesting kind of crew, I think, at the minute, because they not that they're rebuilding themselves, but they're slowly but surely just making sure that everything is nicely brewing at the right time, and they're not forcing the issue all the time. But I think they're very much, and this is where I find it a little bit interesting as well, is each team will have their own style and their own kind of nuance of tactics or whatever it is. And a lot of teams you can see, I think, potentially recently, are like maybe from the Donegal days of recent times, they're taking some of the tactics, which are great tactics, fine, but they may not apply to a particular team. The same with the backroom team. They may be taking good ideas from other teams and other background staff, but it really doesn't fit for their actual team and the players they have on hand. So they might be very disjointed approaches depending on the players that they have, like you mentioned. If the physios and the S&C or the manager is taking consistent ideas from somewhere else, and the players are like, I'm not sure what's going on here, this isn't really as appropriate as it could be, it's going to definitely make a big difference to their ability to actually really enjoy both the training and then the actual matches themselves from there.
Yeah, no doubt on that one. I think that the key thing is that with the coaches and setups like that, they communicate with each other, but to the players, and it costs you nothing to explain to a player why they're doing something.
Yeah.
You know, well, why you're doing this particular program, but Johnny over there is doing a slightly different variant on that. And to explain in 30 seconds why. And in actual fact, if you can't explain in 30 seconds why, you probably need to revisit it anyway.
Exactly.
But, it's, and again, a common thread amongst these teams is that, kind of coming back to the CrossFit strength and conditioning world, is that they embrace strength and conditioning on a 12-month, year-round basis. It's a bit like the puppy at Christmas. He's not just for Christmas, he's for all year. It's
exactly.
Strength and conditioning is not just for the two-month off-season. And that's something that's got to be really, really understood, because it's kind of a bugbear of mine sometimes when I talk to say coaches or teams, and they talk about doing their strength and conditioning for the next 6 weeks, and I go, oh no, here we go.
Exactly.
You know, and you guys, I'm sure, see that too. So
Absolutely,
I think these people, they take the time to understand, you know, why they're doing what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
and what it's going to deliver out the far side. Mm-hmm. Not just aesthetically, but, you know, actually, for how does it plug into the whole performance piece? So, you know, it's probably even challenging assumptions around strength and conditioning, which is mm-hmm. which is one of the things that I really liked about CrossFit when it came on the scene, is mm-hmm. that it created such a rumpus amongst the traditional strength and conditioning community, because it was challenging their viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of looking at it differently and doing it differently, and it was refreshing to see that has maintained, that initial momentum has maintained, and is. It's kind of probably growing, actually, in fairness.
Yeah.
And it's making people kind of look a bit differently at it. I'm not seeing as CrossFit as a challenge to strength and conditioning as such. It's a variant of, that's all it is. I mean, it's the same thing as kids climbing trees years ago.
Yeah.
You know, kids don't climb trees now, but, you know, so they do something like CrossFit, which introduces gymnastic moves, which is multi-planar, multi-dimensional, multi-directional, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. Is there a better form of strength and conditioning for field sport? Now, there is something around loading, that there's a conversation around loading, et cetera, but that's
completely
for another day.
Mm-hmm.
But at a high level,
very much.
To embrace it, you know, in an appropriate manner, in a planned way, you mm-hmm. know, is only beneficial on a year-round from a year-round point of view.
Plus,
I think something very, very important is that it's got to be enjoyable. That it just can't be all game face stuff, you know.
Mm.
There has to be an element of enjoyment to it. And I know myself, because my wife does CrossFit every day. Mm. And kind of something, you know, you just, you know, have a look at sometimes. And the one noticeable factor is that everybody's having a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it's competitive.
Absolutely.
You know, yes, there's writing on the whiteboard and figures and lifts, et cetera, et cetera. And everyone doing personal bests and blah, 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 striving. But there's a smile on everybody's face. And that's the bit that I think is interesting from the team point of view, because far too often I go into a gym setting in a team point of view, and they're nearly chewing the bars.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit heavy, yeah.
You know, it's kind of like they have to be there.
Mm.
Or it's a bit like work, and you're going, this just won't catch on at all, especially in, you know, you can kind of say professionals get paid, but it's still got to be enjoyable for those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the noticeable things is if you kind of, you know, success leaves clues. If you look at, say, some videos on YouTube on the All Blacks YouTube channel, the New Zealand All Blacks, the rugby team, sometimes it shows the gym sessions, you know, it's a 2 minute clip just getting an update from the guys. But the noticeable thing is that they're all having a bit of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's a bit of crack going on. And that's, you know, it certainly is missed. In GAA terms, definitely. It's all about, you know, you can work and have fun at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think that's a vital thing. And it's one of the things, in fairness, I think that CrossFit has brought to the party that I've certainly noticed.
Yeah.
And that people have a good time doing it. And they tend to buy in and continue doing it as well.
Yeah.
They stick at it, for want of a better phrase.
Exactly. I think that's a huge part. I mean, I think, looking at with the CrossFit model anyways, and I've been involved in it for maybe the guts of 10 years and lots of other sports for the years previous and soccer and boxing and different ones. But for me, the big, exactly, a huge part of it is the enjoyment and the kind of ability for it to be a very lifelong endeavor. And the fact that it has so much, so many different elements involved, very difficult for it to actually really be to be ever beaten, if that makes sense. So you're always going to have something to play with.
One thing I would add, sorry, Corey, not to put in there, it's an important point, especially with youth players and youth athletes, is that it's very, very daunting for those guys and girls to be, you know, introduced to the gym environment, if you like.
Mm.
you know, and doing it responsibly and appropriately is massive, or else they'll reject it. Because if they reject that kind of thing in their teen years, they're going to reject it later on.
Very
and
much.
It doesn't have to be just about performance and winning and stuff. It's about their general health, because they don't have access to that range of movement on a daily basis. Maybe, as I said, we did when we were kids, going kicking football outside and doing X, Y, and Z, you know, building houses out of bales of hay in the field and stuff. They just don't have that type of stimulus anymore. Mm-hmm. So to actually introduce them to an environment where, yes, it's progressive, it's safe, it's responsible, it's appropriate, but it's also fun.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it with their mates. And yes, there's a bit of competition, but the end result is still the same thing. They're getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
They get more athletically able. And that's what it's about. That's what the strength conditioning process, I think, is about. It's about delivering out the far side a guy or girl that's more athletically able to deliver in their particular sporting discipline. That's really
much.
It.
Yeah.
And I think that's a point that sometimes gets missed, even at all levels.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if they're getting paid or not, if they're, you know, with the Manchester United Academy, they still got to enjoy it. There still has to be this sense of, you know, progression, you know, enjoyment, and that I'm actually in control of my own destiny here a little bit.
Absolutely. I think I completely agree. I think it's... I suppose what we found anyways from, and we have a teens class in our gym, and the value that it, like, this is, a lot of the kids would be playing sports, and they would be training with certain teams, be it hockey teams or GA teams or basketball teams or whatever, but a huge amount of them have not had before, so that means that they're coming in with a little bit lower confidence levels or a little bit more wariness, I suppose, of the activity potentially to come. So they're finding huge, huge benefit to that. Some of them have such great hidden talents, like their weightlifting ability is spectacular without any major loading. Their agility work is fantastic, and they're coming out of nowhere with all these really, really good abilities. Otherwise, if there wasn't that activity, if there wasn't the CrossFit, I suppose, scope there, they may not be able to explore it as much. And then potentially add it going forwards. Like, I always look at if a younger person comes to any of our classes and I'm talking to the parents, I will say, look, our goal here isn't to make little Johnny an amazing athlete at 12. I want him to get to the stage where he could go to a college, like go to college, go into the gym in a particular college or whatever it is, or in his when he's working or whatever, and know what he's actually doing very safely and have a good scope to play with,
right,
other than just going in and going, I need a program off such and such, making everybody quite self-sufficient in that kind of a framework. So if they are working with a team, they have a good awareness of what to do, and plus they can be really of benefit to the team. Buy into it a lot quicker as it goes forwards, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think there's so many ancillary benefits in that type of environment that have kind of a huge amount to do with the sport they're playing, but also a huge amount to do with life. The fact that they learn, the team dynamic that they learn, even though they're lifting by themselves, if you like, but it's within a team environment.
Mm-hmm.
There's support there. There's interaction. There's a social aspect to it. There's a discipline aspect to it. There's a huge amount of things there that kind of, how would you put it, accidentally on purpose.
Exactly,
you know, build a person as much as the athlete or player, as the case may be. And that's hugely beneficial. I mean, I think, you know, to actually be able to turn around to a parent and say, look, our goal here is lifelong involvement. Is keep Johnny or Mary here healthy for life. That's a huge undertaking. I mean, that's a monstrous benefit to society.
Very much.
You know, a very close second is the social skills and the personal skills that they develop within that environment. And I mean, you know, you don't want to jump on any bandwagons, but you kind of see the results of not possibly developing the overall person at the cost of just focusing on the player. You see it on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I can't stress strongly enough the benefit of actually dropping, you know, guys, girls and their teens into that type of an environment, and, you know, where it's not awfully structured, where there is a structure, but it's a little bit more flexible, as I said, than just going in and doing the three sets of 10.
Definitely.
Which, again, I'm not knocking, and I'll probably get a lot of emails about this now. But, you know, but you've always got to strive to find a better way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like once upon a time, you know, if you kind of look back at old black and white photographs and old books, the circus strongman, what was he doing? Well, he was squatting and he was doing single leg squats, etc., etc. You know, and that's, I wouldn't say it's kind of come back into vogue, but the answer is that there's no new answers. They're all old answers, and it's kind of saying, right, we can't climb trees anymore. I know I keep beating up and climbing trees, but you know, we can't do that anymore. But what we can do is climb up the ropes. We can do X, Y, or Z. We can do what do you guys call them, kipping pull-ups or something like that. That type of thing. You know, and it's replicating those movements. It's not new. It's just it's a today's solution for that.
Yeah.
It's but within that then is the sense of achievement, is the sense of fun, the athletic development, all of these kind of things. Plus, crucially, I think the guy or girl feels that they're somewhat in charge.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely no harm, because it expands out the discipline, as I said, from just being one of these other things that has to be done, which, you know, I think runs into sand quite quickly when it's something that just has to be done. When you say you have to be in the gym twice a week.
Absolutely.
I just don't buy that one, to be honest with you. I think, when you're paying the guys or girls, sure, you can say, we're in the gym Monday at 9, and that's fine. It's their job. You get that, but you know, outside of that, I think there's got to be a bigger conversation around it.
Completely. And on that point, now I'll move a little bit more towards some of the not necessarily specifics, but you have great experience working with the VX Sports system, and the GPS system, and you have a ready to perform program. You have a number of different programs you kind of bring to teams or to groups. Is there any particular themes you have found of improvements in S&C kind of relationship via those GPS I suppose kind of interact or those kind of what do we call
tools
them
for the job?
Essentially, like, have you found any parts of the S&C I suppose spectrum or area that you have that has worried you the most, or has actually made really, really big progress? Is it like that, getting out of the 3x10 mentality and into very much more an individualized position for players, so that they can really make sure that they can actually enjoy and get as much out of training and the game as possible, and make sure that they can really be a benefit for the team? Or is there any areas that you've found that the S&C has been lacking significantly from the use of the GPS? Have you found that, like, okay, there's a lot more hip issues going on, which we're aware of, but is it just that lack of general activity, or like farm activity or whatever it is, that is lowering the ability for people to actually make really, really big progress in that? Have you found any particular interesting elements on the
Yeah, I think the idea of a solution like VX, and there's a number of them out there, is that it will help you kind of question your assumptions. In terms of, say, if you monitor a team of players in over a number of games, invariably you probably get to see, you know, quite a few things cropping up now all the time. Performance staff and coaches are always quite surprised to see the demands of the game. They're also quite surprised to see the different demands within the game, so the different positional demands, and it leads to that question, why is everybody training the same then, if the demands of the game are different for everybody? The other small factor, well, it's not a small factor, it's small at the start, but it becomes, the importance becomes quite obvious quite quickly, is things like just analysing your warm-up pre-match, or pre training session, the outdoor sessions. People tend to use the same warm-up, which is fine, because players get used to it and they're comfortable with it, and that's okay, that's cool. But invariably, in my experience, is that they tend to be quite off the money, if you like, in terms of, they're quite volume heavy but intensity poor. So invariably, you have a team that's really still only warming up to the demands of the game in the first 10 minutes. And when people actually correct that, the impact on performance is stark. It's quite huge, actually, when they change the warm up appropriately.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that highlights. I think one of the other factors that comes out of it quite quickly is that people are able to talk on an objective basis all of a sudden. The subjectivity, the gut feel is fine, it's okay, but there's a huge amount of confirmation bias attached to that.
Yeah.
When you can integrate some objective data to back up your gut feel, it leads to a better level of decision making, and it leads to a better level of questioning. And I think that's the huge benefit, Padraig, out of using, you know, say a tool, a solution like VX, is that it gives access and prompts towards better questions. Sure, it gives lots of answers, but it gives, you know, prompts towards better questions. So, for example, right, there's the demands of the game. Let's have a look at our training session. Is our training session mirroring demands of the game? What's our loading like? Are we kind of periodizing this at all? Is an intense session actually intense, or is it just volume heavy?
Exactly.
You know, are our favorite drills actually delivering anything? You know, how much time are guys spending standing around? And going back to simple things, that not even simple actually, that's not the right thing to say, but awfully important things, like say the level of hip injuries. Is it down to something as simple as that a lot of our training is done in straight lines, whereas the game itself, the event, is actually multi-directional, multi-dimensional, different planes of motion, which yet we haven't strengthened through those. So equally, it harks back then to things like your gym program. Is it just in the sagittal plane, or is it multi-directional? There's lots of rabbit holes to go down when you start pulling out this data. But I think the big thing is that, and it's kind of a catchy hashtag that I use for it, but the whole idea is that you're looking for insights, not information. There's wads of data, but you're really looking for the insights. So you have to formulate the questions first to position to the data. And then you don't have data, you get decisions. And that's the hugely beneficial piece. And that those, you know, what you monitor on the field can actually matter to what happens in the gym, in that environment as well. So it's actually before you actually start using a tool like VX or any of those piece of monitoring equipment, you decide that, yeah, it's the appropriate piece for me because I can position, I have the right questions now to position to this data, this piece of equipment, and that it's going to deliver, you know, the reliable, accurate insights that I do need. And then I think once you're doing that, there's a level of patience required, because no more than, you know, doing one lift in a gym is going to have an instant impact. It has to be over a period of time where you're where you're seeing habits and trends before you can truly evaluate what's going on. So equally, well, you know, to hark back to a 3 sets of 10 might work for me, might just not do anything for you.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. That's an interesting one. When you're working with a particular team, this goes back to this the most recent kind of point there, the time that it definitely would take to get enough insight from the actual questions and from the data. I suppose a lot of teams, like you mentioned earlier on, are in that kind of that shorter off-season mentality. If they don't have the resources to potentially like take up a lot of these units and things like that, and they don't have a huge backroom team, I think a lot of that though can be made quite accessible if there's a good buy-in to that year-round approach, and to the longer-term approach for the actual club or team or county or whatever it is. Like I mentioned earlier on, you'll find a lot of teams are maybe not the most successful teams in the country and in the world, but they're trying to borrow ideas from the higher level and really, really strong teams, but they're not buying the whole package. They're not understanding what they're actually trying to buy. They're just buying some of the shiny objects rather than the actual the systematic approach to it. I mean, I think one of the biggest things I watched a couple of things from the RFU a few years back, and it was only a small little thing, but it resonated hugely with me. That each morning before they were training the Irish rugby team, they had to go through on their way to breakfast, they had to go through a series of mobility tests, just basic mobility tests to see where they're at, and then the amount of actual feedback you could get from that to a to adjust the loading and adjust the movement and their training load throughout the day was huge, because it just meant that, okay, Sam, someone slept poorly, they were all over the shop on their right, arm or something like that, or do you know what, they training from yesterday, their hamstrings tightened up a lot or whatever it was, meant that they could make a huge difference to the appropriate amount of training for that day. But a huge amount of that will come back to, like you said, just being really patient with the approach and having the longer term approach than just like, okay, well, look, we've got 3 months here, lads. We've got to dig in. We've got this lad in now and he's doing this, and we've got the S&C guys. And, you know, that kind of mentality is quite difficult to change, but it's the only way really to make huge progress with your individual team or group, I think.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think a lot of the time, especially when people are striving for a bit of success and they're under pressure for it, to kind of take an a la carte approach.
Yeah.
It's almost like, yeah, like you use the example you've used already. I see the All Blacks are doing that. Mm. You know, I'll use that. Mm. I see Irish rugby are doing that, which is, we'll start that.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes back to that, the terminology is, we'll start there, strength and conditioning. You've heard that term used yourself. And
Absolutely,
it's a bit like this little boy in the dam putting all the fingers into the holes. Whereas I think when the people that have success, they actually slow down to go faster, to say, okay, hold on a second. What do we need to do? How are we going to go about it? And why are we going to go about it in this fashion? And then what is working for people out there that we can integrate into our own unique setting, our own unique culture? We might not have the budget that everyone else has, but there's certain things, behaviors, approaches, etc., that we can buy in. Yeah. And then when we do start these, why are we doing them? And how does it benefit not only the players, but does it benefit the staff and making their life a little bit easier, making their roles easier to succeed in, and really, really kind of tackling it in a methodical way like that, in a process-driven manner. So it's not really focusing on the outcome, it's really focusing on your day-to-day, your response on a day-to-day basis, not your reaction. I think people that react, go out and they buy all of these things and they bring all of these coaches in without much thought, the people that respond will go, okay, we know what we want to look like in 2 years, 3 years' time. We know what the players need to be able to do. What will give us the insights we require to bring that to fruition on a daily basis? So be it in the sports science discipline, be it in the strength and conditioning discipline. And then, you know, kind of getting out of the way and letting those people do their jobs, but also allowing them the levels of objective feedback to show that what they're doing is having a positive effect. So, you know, yes, you can measure strength gains, but in a performance context, the strength gains actually look like, you know, the players being faster, more durable, there's less injuries, etc., etc. So, you know, what have we got in place to measure that? Not just that, you know, Porrick can squat 120 kilos last year, 130 kilos this year. You know, okay, so what? You know, so it's always asking that question, so what? What does that mean on the pitch? And then how can we measure that to make sure that everybody is achieving what they said they were going to achieve? And it really is taking that approach, not the a la carte approach that, you know, mimicking and aping what other people are doing, because, you know, hey, look, what works, you know, for the All Blacks, what works for Manchester United, what works for Dublin Football. Works for them because they're them. It doesn't necessarily mean it will work for anyone else. That's the important piece there. I think is that, you know, no more than when probably someone comes into your gym, first thing you'll do is say, well, why are you here? And it's not a question that's asked very often in a team setting. Why are we doing this, you know?
There's a lot of assumptions going on, and I think this is where, and the kind of that next point, we spoke a lot about the be it the S&C orientation or even the injury risk potential, but I think the coaching, or the, I suppose that the, be it the tactical or the technical coaching elements then of certain sports can also be a huge part to it, because like that, the experience of having potentially a lot of these coaches having played the games or at least seen the actual games, seen thousands and thousands, hundreds and hundreds of games, and being aware, very aware of the tactics necessary for it, can make a huge difference into the actual ability of the physios, the S&C, to really push the whole project forwards. But I think a big part of it is, it's a lot of, I see recently, I suppose, that a lot more the players in a lot of these teams potentially will buy into the S&C guy a little bit more, girl a little bit more, and maybe the physio a bit more, because the tactics, just they may be borrowing some tactics from other higher level teams, if that makes sense. And I think it's pretty important for them to for the coaches to be quite detailed and quite strong about their team's kind of style and approach, and then how it's going to make sure how they're going to make sure that the S&C and the physios can all be on board with that. I think that's a big part of it. I know I've always found it interesting with the likes of the GA, for example, that there's the, you'll have your manager, your bonus store, and then you'll have maybe six or seven selectors, which I'm not sure if I'm always, I can see the logistics potential for it fine because it's a large county or whatever, but it's always, I've always found it interesting that it's really that necessary to have six or seven other people selecting the team. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, rather than coaches, if that makes sense, you know.
But yeah, it kind of goes back to the doing things this way, because we've always done them this way. And not questioning the assumption. But it's an interesting point you make around the strength conditioning people, the physio staff, because invariably I think that relationship tends to be a little bit more, I'll use the phrase personal, but I'll explain what I mean there on that. It tends to be a little bit more adult-adult, whereas the on-field relationship can be a bit teacher-pupil.
Exactly, yeah.
And where it runs into sand is that I feel, and I've seen, and I've been victim to it, is that when you use the teacher-pupil model, you know, and there's a reason for it insofar as it could be time constraints. However, you're really not doing justice to the performance readiness of the player, in the sense that once they go across the white line, they've got to think and decide and act for themselves in a very chaotic environment. You know, and rigid plans tend to not last. It's the Mike Tyson thing, you know. Plans are fine till you get a punch in the mouth. You know, it's the exact same thing on a football field. The plan is fine until it goes wrong the first time, and then everyone's looking, going, oh, what we do now? Whereas I think when you give guys a structure to operate within and get them then to contribute to building this from the bottom up, so say, right, I'll lay the foundations as a head coach. Now you start building the house and putting in the windows and doors and stuff like that, and we'll work together on that. And all the while, I'll project manage this building to make sure that it's true, and it's true to what we're after in terms of the overall effect, the end result, if you like. Then I think you have a different dynamic. You have that kind of more adult dynamic that you need, that has to be, of course, fostered over time. It's not just something that can work on day one. But then what does? And I think it's a relationship maybe that's more akin then to what the S&C guys and the physio people have, because, you know, you rarely see a team set up where the players don't get on with the physio and S&C coach on a personal basis. They always tend to, and that's, there's something in that.
Yeah,
I'm not saying
much.
Everybody's got to be friends. It's not that, but there's got to be that relationship there, that as I said, that adult thing where there's that free swapping of insights, opinions, conjecture, etc., objections, whatever it might be, and everyone gets it all out there so that everybody understands, and then that I can go away and go, you know what, I might have X amount of years experience in this, but I've learned something new tonight. I've learned that, you know, I've got to change my way about doing this. I've got whatever it might be, there's a better way. And that's all it is. It's finding a better way. It's no different to, you know, the way I'll always phrase it is that, you know, the physios go off and do their CPD work. S&C people tend to do it by themselves informally through reading and videos and stuff, or go off and actually do courses. Coaches don't, by and large. Now, I can say that because I am one. You know, again, you know, I'll probably get a blaze of emails about this one, but by and large, they don't.
No, they're so quite, the coaching, quite wedded,
you know, so what can actually happen is that a player, instead of having 10 years experience, has 1 year 10 times. Whereas that tends not to happen in the S&C environment. Do you know what I mean? You may start off, you know, for example, let me see. you may decide as an S&C coach, right, goblet squatting is the place for this guy or girl to start.
Exactly, yeah.
But that will change. That will move on. That will progress.
Mm-hmm.
But all too often we see teams training and coaching outdoors on the field or in the court, the basketball court, 1 year, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times.
Yeah.
So how would things change? Mm. You know, so all of a sudden they're more athletically gifted, sure.
Mm.
Because of the S&C stuff, they're more maybe robust to injury because the physio's intervention, the S&C intervention.
Yeah.
You know, and they're more knowledgeable because of the sports science stuff. But ultimately, when the rubber hits the road, nothing's changed that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's maybe why in a lot of sports, particularly say a GEA context, the players, the teams are better prepared possibly than ever, but they're still getting the same end result.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is frustrating. It's very, very frustrating.
Exactly. I think. An interesting point on that, I suppose, even looking at, and I think a lot of places, a lot of people and teams can get dragged into, I suppose it's a bit of an old enough kind of mindset, but even the teacher-pupil mentality that you spoke of there is really interesting. I'm just thinking of a very high-level team at the moment, and the manager would have announced the team like maybe a few hours before this fairly considerable game.
Yeah.
Which I've always found like, especially at a high level, at a very professional level, I've never really understood that reasoning. Now, maybe the odd time it might be just to keep things fresh or whatever, but I've always found if these players are quite professional, they understand their job, they know what the crack is, they're very much, like you mentioned before, very robust in their approach and they're very positive in it. That unpredictability isn't really as necessary as some people think, and it's just a bit of kind of frivolity, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think the same happens potentially a lot with kind of smaller teams or maybe less high level teams, and there's a potential for just these kind of reactive type of situations occurring. So. Great, such and such Johnny he's really up on, well, like, to go back into relation to the actual GPS type work. Someone is coming back with really good results after the space of a month. Great, he's in the team now. Whereas someone else maybe still tactically more acute, more aware, they still may have maybe a very, very valuable part of the team, but that just because such and such has had a better piece of data on him, he now might get thrown into it. So that kind of stuff can be a little bit sharp. From some managers, I'd say, or some groups. So it just takes like that bit of patience to assess, okay, well, we're aiming for a particular point rather than just trying to get everybody, like, win every single game, which is fine, of course, but I think a lot of the time, like, if you look at the likes of Dublin or you look at the likes of even the All Blacks, not every single, I don't believe that every single game they need to win. They definitely want to win, fine, but they don't always need to win. So they're not going to pull out every single stop every game to force their hand, especially if it's early in the season or if it's in a training game or something like that. They're using it appropriately so that they can get the best result when the time comes, if that makes sense. So
I think it's, you know, it kind of goes back to the process of performing. It's focusing on each step. You know, you start thinking about the result, you choke. You start just focusing on, I mean, as I'll always say to players, look, at the best way to play this game is not to view it as a 60-minute game, view it as 61-minute games.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in that respect, then, life becomes a lot easier. Okay, so all I have to do now is play for the next minute, so all I have to do is this and this. Okay, that's one game down, the next minute, the next minute, the next minute. Now, that's a childish way of looking at it, you know, but you can see where I'm coming from.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
I think when you focus on just, when you know what the big picture looks like, and then you say, okay, for me to deliver the big picture, I need to do A, B, and C. Well, then life is kind of cool. I mean, you know, what you said there about naming the team an hour before the game and stuff, it's a bit dated, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in your environment there, you wouldn't, you know, say like a CrossFit Open or something like that. I'm throwing out terms now, I know nothing about it, but I've heard, okay. But yeah, to give an example, I mean, I think the programs for that CrossFit Open come out midweek, and there's a level of, I've seen the level of excitement it generates in terms of people talking about it and hearing away from the phone to other people and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but you wouldn't kind of dream of them rocking up on a Friday to do it and then telling them, ah, no, it's changed.
Yeah, exactly.
You just wouldn't do it, you know.
No, yeah.
Yet, we kind of do it in team sport, and it's a kind of bizarre thing. It's a, it can be a little bit of kind of control and command, which, you know, it's a bit dated and a bit draconian. But yeah, I think there's scope for looking far, far more at the bigger picture and then adopting the behaviours that suit that bigger picture and that contribute to it, you know, and on an adult-adult basis, or certainly leading to that adult-adult basis if you're working with younger athletes, younger players, that you kind of say, look, this is how we want to behave here. This is how you'll need to behave in many years to come. That will, you know, it'll not sustain them only in what they do in the gym or in the field, but in life then as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It shows them that this kind of particular approach and process works and works well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Paul, I'm gonna leave you in the next minute or two, but I'm just curious if you any particular lessons you would have learned over the years that will help coaches, be it S&Cs, be it just the actual the tactical coaches, etc. Is there any particular lessons that you have found? Especially even in your time working with the VX system and MatchFit, and even your time with Satanta and stuff like that, you've had a huge vast amount of experience. Is there any particular point lessons you think that a lot of coaches should take on board, even a couple of pieces, be it the value of linking the S&C correctly with the whole lot? Is there any particular points you have kind of found really, really helpful over the last while?
I think there's probably two things. Yeah, it's no different to on the field or on the court. Mm-hmm. Communication is a huge one. I think by and large we live our daily lives kind of solitary, if you like. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing I've absolutely learned that absolutely works is creating relationships with people in the same profession or allied professions. Mm-hmm. Talking, reaching out, you know, asking questions, sharing information, because, you know, I'll always tell everyone, I'll give anyone my training sessions or the data, the GPS data from them. It doesn't bother me because what are they going to do? You know?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that attitude is for everybody, but no. I think maybe there's something in it. And the reason I say that is that you mentioned Satanta there, Satanta College. Mm-hmm. When I'm facilitating the workshops and lectures there, the one thing that, you know, why it's so good, it's great for me, because I kind of throw the ball in and let them at it. You have 12 to 15 to 20 coaches in the same classroom on a Saturday. And sure, there's an agenda to go through and a PowerPoint thing to follow. But invariably, once you kind of light the touch paper and get the guys and girls talking, there's that a vast amount of experience in the room across many sports, different ages, grades, etc., etc., that, you know, they start bouncing off each other, swapping, sharing opinions, and that's what makes the day for them, not what I have up on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
You know, this is what makes the day. I mean, you have somebody maybe from a professional rugby team swapping and sharing stuff with someone who's over a kid's under 15 basketball team, and they're really getting into something, you know, and you're kind of, Jesus, this is amazing.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't tend to happen anymore after the clap, you know what I mean? Mm. It happens. Mm. And then it happens in isolation. Whereas I think if there can be a lot more of that freedom of sharing of information, that kind of coming together for the greater good, because nobody knows it all, you know. And this whole thing is changing so much and so fast. This whole coaching piece, sports science, strength and conditioning, it changes so much and so fast that, you know, everybody's got to talk and really kind of critically evaluate. Well, is there something in this CrossFit thing? Is there something in this player monitoring stuff? Is there something in this, you know, questioning approach to coaching rather than kind of the dictatorial approach?
Yeah.
You know, is there something in it for me? And you know, let's have a look at it. I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit like kind of rejecting foods because, oh, they don't look nice.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you taste them, they're actually lovely, you know. So it's a childish kind of approach, I think, which is maybe a strong thing to say, but again, I think unless we start talking in that language, you know, things don't change.
Yeah.
and things need to change for the benefit of players and athletes and people just involved in the 99% that are involved in kind of everyday sport, if I want to call it that, recreational sport, because they need to come out the other side reasonably injury-free, not banged up, not having to have a hip replacement, etc., etc., you know? Like, that, one of the great crimes is the amount of, say, I know for a fact, GAA players certainly that are walking around needing hip replacements, knee replacements, etc., etc. Like, that's nonsense. Yeah. That just does not need to happen. It just does not need to happen. And the sooner we all get talking with that in mind, to say, look, you know, what are you doing that's working? Here's something I found that's not working, and generating debate and, you know, and a kind of online conversation, because the reality is, part, there's never been more medium there to talk.
Completely.
You know?
Completely.
Apart from picking up the phone.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But no, there are some fantastic fantastic ideas. Paul, where can people get in touch with you? So it's MatchFit Ireland is your company at the moment. Are you still with Satanta tutoring wise a little bit?
Yeah. I suppose I've that on the go, MatchFit, which is my own business. Then I look after the VX Sport business for Europe as well.
Cool.
Excellent stuff. And I'm involved in another technology startup, which is to do with biomechanical assessment. So that's only a startup phase.
Nice stuff.
But I guess probably the best way is through the website. It's www.matchfitireland.com. It's all the one word. Feel free to email me if you like. It's paul@matchfitireland.com. Through Twitter @matchfitireland, and also on Instagram and Facebook as well. So
nice, excellent stuff.
Any questions, observations, feedback, disagreements, feel free to get in touch.
Well, super stuff, Paul. I appreciate your time. Some really, really great great interesting ideas. I think like that, I don't know you too well, but I think we have a lot of the same mentalities, and like that, be it in a certain in particular sports, or if it's in CrossFit or whatever it is, I think, like you mentioned, a lot of the straightforward communication is what's needed, and it's really very, very helpful for understanding each other's points of view and approaches, and I think it's the way to go going forwards. So really, really appreciate your time this morning.
No problem at all. Enjoyed it. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks a million, Paul. Cheers.